2019, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. I ain't in Pedro. I'm in Strong Beach. No, actually Signal Hill. Excuse
yeah, that's
me.
Right. Yeah.
A little island inside of it. And, you know, brother, not Matt's not with me, but Mike Maketa, Stephen Hodges.
Hello.
Hey. Welcome aboard. Hey. I'm about to sally forth with them on a adventure Thursday. But we're doing Prague now. And, yeah, decided to have them aboard on Watt for Pedro show. We could talk about musical journeys. We started the show off with John Coltrane's first recording. This is a it's called Coco, the tune, but the band is the Navy Musicians Jam Session in Oahu, Hawaii, 13th July, 1946. And then from the album Wall of Flowers, coming out on Big Ego, done that not too far in North Long Beach here.
Right.
Chris Schlar, Hospital Song, Baguette, Kempner, Watt. And we'll get into that later, but let's start first with you, Mike. Mike, your earliest musical recollection.
It's gotta be my dad playing guitar. My dad always played guitar. He had a wedding band, and I remember he would go out, he would be out on the weekend nights playing, and I would wake up the next morning, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, whatever, and I'd come out into the kitchen, and I remember seeing like the big amp and the guitar case. And I remember it kind of smelled like cigarettes because everybody was smoking inside.
Right.
So it kind of stank, right? But I learned to associate that smell, I guess, with that or something. But I would kind of smell it, and I would see it was there. And then I remember kind of like he would be about to pack it up or put it away or whatever, and I would ask him to play something for me. He'd take the guitar, he'd plug it in. And I don't even really remember what he would play, some Chet Atkins, Les Paul kind of stuff. But I remember like watching him play and thinking like that was the coolest thing I'd ever see in my life. I have a great relationship with my parents. I love my dad, love my mom. And I remember like thinking like, I can't believe he's doing this too. You know, it was so cool to me that I just, I wanted to emulate it in some way. So I didn't, but I didn't start with guitar, even though that's, you know, what I play now. When it came time to like pick up.
There was one sitting around the house though.
Oh
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like acoustic.
Yeah, there was like an acoustic in the corner all the time, right? And then there was like the nice one he would sort of keep packed up. Yeah, but there was always one.
Was there a piano?
There was no piano. It was just guitars. One or two guitars. It was not like they were everywhere. And I think maybe I like wasn't allowed to touch it when it was out, you know, like I couldn't just, I would do, you know, I'd touch the strings to hear it and like maybe worry I was going to get in trouble, but it was never a big deal, you know.
But he never pushed it on you, or he's waiting for you to ask?
He never pushed it on me. They never pushed anything on me. And what happened, he taught me my first lessons, but I remember bugging him.
You asked him?
Yeah.
Did you ask him? I'm curious. Did you ask him how he got started?
I think I have at a point, but I think it was just, you know, he liked the sound of it.
So your grandpa wasn't a guitar?
No, there wasn't anyone else really. We have like some distant relatives. There's like a page in the family history folder I remember that's like some distant relatives in Italy played violin or guitar maybe or whatever. But he just, I think he liked Chet Atkins
mandolin,
right. Yeah, he liked Chet Atkins and he wanted to figure out how to do it, Les Paul. So he got himself a guitar and took lessons. And for me though, it was seeing him and hearing him and wanting to kind of, probably just wanting to emulate him.
What about school? Know. Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Yeah, so, and actually this is interesting because now I realize how, like, totally fortunate this was, like, being older and seeing that a lot of towns and cities, like, now really don't have music stuff.
Absolutely.
No, a lot's gone. And
totally.
Mike Flea set up that Silver Lake.
Yeah, right.
Stuff he went like back that. To Fairfax High where he learned trumpet. They had gotten rid of the probe.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Or you can do it if you have like a bunch of money now to get.
So I do gigs for Martin Wang with the music in Chinatown for Castellar Grade School.
Mm.
Yeah, they have to do benefits to get the money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This, it just used to be part of the school.
Part of education.
Public school. I went to public school, right?
So that's why I asked.
Yeah, it was great. So I remember in fourth grade, you could pick an instrument.
Yeah.
Right? It could be like violin or clarinet, and like maybe those are the only two that you could choose from. So I chose violin. I started on violin, probably because it was like most like guitar kind of, not even thinking about it. And I did that for 4 or 5 years. I don't think I got really good at violin, but I just played it. And I wanted to make some noise, so I kept at it. And then in maybe 7th grade or something, you could pick a band instrument. And I remember I picked trombone. And I remember, I remember I picked that because I asked my dad, what did you play in marching bands? Like, I played trombones. And I was like, all right, I'm going to play trombone.
You know what I hear about why marching band wants to do bone?
Why?
Big mouthpiece. When you're marching.
Oh, it's much easier.
A French horn trumpet. Yeah. It's so hard.
Yeah, it wasn't.
But the big ass.
Yeah, you can.
And you know the good thing about bone? Bass clef.
It's loud too, in a great way. You know?
Yeah. Well, I can read bass clef because of it. I can read it. I'll read it on guitar. Yeah. I thought the other thing that was great about it though was intonation. You have to make sure you're in tune.
Yeah, right.
There's no other way to get in tune.
It's not like the Leo Fender precision.
But your
lack of precision. What about the thing after school with your buddies in the basement or the bedroom or the garage?
Yeah, so then what happened, and this that actually totally happened. I remember I would be in school band, trombone at that point. I kind of let violin go. And then I remember at a certain point, I must have been, maybe I was 13 years old. That's when I was like, all right, this is fun, but let's get real. Everybody knows I really want to get at the guitar. So I would bug my dad. Like, he'd show me how to do something, anything, chords, whatever. And he would show me some chords. And I remember he would say, okay, learn those three chords and then come back and I'll show you the next three. Okay. Something like that. So I would do, and I would just like shed those chords, try to memorize them, switch real fast. And then he would teach me like a song.
Like copy off a record?
No, he would just show it to me with the other guitar.
Because I mean, in D-Boone, that's what was done. We were learning.
That happened for me later once I kind of realized that I could do that, you know, because at first I was just like, well, I'll go to my dad and get the next song. So he would show it to me on his guitar. I'd match the fingers, right? It was like, you know, Chet Atkins, Les Paul tunes like that.
What's your first guitar?
Wildwood Flower, maybe. The first guitar I was playing was an old Yamaha classical guitar that was one of my dad's, which I still have.
So nylon string?
Nylon string. Not super easy to play. Yeah. But also, he was really gracious because once I could kind of get around on that, and he saw that I wasn't like banging it around, I was respecting the guitar, he would let me play his Les Paul.
Okay.
So then I got to play that, and I was like, oh, this is
through an amp.
So easy. Through an amp, oh, there's volume, right? And then I was thinking like, oh, this kind of sounds like some stuff I like to listen to on my own. And so I would start to put on records, you know, Nirvana, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
Violent Femmes.
Yeah.
Right? And I would listen to that, and I would try to figure out those tunes. You know, power chord. I learned the power chord. That was a big opening thing. Like, oh man. And then I found other kids at school that, like, kid played the drums, kid played keyboard.
Yeah.
Somebody wanted to sing, right? Oh, let's try this tune. I learned this song. And then from then on out, it was just learning songs, practicing a lot. I got to play guitar in the school jazz band. I was still playing trombone. This is in Agawam, Massachusetts. And the teachers were great. There was a music theory class in my high school.
Wow.
That was crazy. Like 11th grade, I got to learn about intervals and triads and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was like, wow, I can't believe we all get to do this. And now I realize, like, man, almost nobody got to do that in high school, you know?
I know.
So it was really a good situation.
Especially, I want to play your version with Jim Keltner doing Blue Velvet.
Yeah. Thank you.
Fox for Pedro show. Yeah, we heard Bagetta, Keltner, and Watt doing Blue Velvet, but it was a duet. I wasn't really playing on that one, so. But I'm on the name of the song.
You're there in spirit.
Then me and Hodge here helping out Chris Murphy, not too far from here. It used to be a foundation of a nightclub that we played on. And a tune that Chris wrote called Blues for Bukowski, probably for Mr. Charles Bukowski. Mm-hmm. And he played violin. And I don't think we recorded together.
I
was in a little apartment up in Hollywood sweating it out when I put on my part. And after that, we had the Still House Plants from Glasgow doing Left Break, Awkward with Anti. That's Devin Huff, stand-up bass from Nils Klein Sangers, with Kay. Kara Rossler. And in a way, I think maybe it's better than Dose, because the string bass with an electric bass was way more contrast, like what Herbie Flowers did with that Walk on the Wild Side. Yeah, when with me and Kay, even though we did it 30 years, I mean, the two basses are kind of close. Yeah, we had to really do composition, make holes for each other.
Yeah.
Because you're almost like such a... Yeah, I got this band. We both play kick drum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, come on.
A lot of options there.
I use calfskin.
Okay, yeah, calfskin.
You gotta search for
then we had Guided by Voices, Bob Pollard with his 102nd album.
Oh, jeez.
I know. Your lights are out. Now, Lauren, record of rarities, contrast, Graph from the Netherlands with titles, or what do you call that? Eponymous? And the name of the thing is the same name as you?
Eponymous.
And then Wall of Flowers, the title song from Bagetta, Keltner, and Watt album. On big, you know, thank you, Chris Lobb. In fact, Chris Lobb's going out with us, people. Now, here's the stick man, part of... hold on. Can't talk your way out, but that's a lesson, kid. Okay, Steve Hodge is here. This is, in a way, Mike having Steve aboard is really righteous because it's been like 20 years since we've been playing.
Right.
Steve Hodges, people, is the drummer man for my first opera, Contemplating the Engine Room, along with Nels Klein. And so Mike Bagetta has reunited us, and we're playing. Although, we did do that thing with Chris Murphy. How long was that? 10?
That was at least 10 years ago, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about your earliest music?
Well, I came from the family where the children took dance lessons and piano lessons. That was my...
Was it Long Beach?
Yeah, my mother's era, my grandmother's era. All of my cousins had gone through the same thing. So I got associated with it. My mom played the piano a little bit. And
so there's one in the house?
Yeah, we had a piano. And so that was the earliest association of with me actually making sound and making music. And, you know, I really didn't, you know, you don't really see the bigger picture in that situation.
Sure.
You're sort of, just feeling your way through it. And it was beautiful, but it somehow, I just wanted to go play with my friends and not practice so much. So, unfortunately, the piano lessons kind of went away.
But, so your mom had you do.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I've had a lot of people on the show with the piano lesson thing.
Yeah.
And it covers the whole gamut.
Yeah.
Some people, it was the greatest thing. It's helping them write songs now. Other people almost got out of music 100% because it's such a nightmare.
Yeah.
And it seems, when I listen to all these stories, it depended on the teacher.
Right. Yeah.
So they were assholes. It really turned people off, but there was other people who could coax it in and bring it and make it an asset.
Yeah.
So was that the first instrument that you tried? Was
it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was your experience?
Well, you know, I liked it. I mean, it was okay. I liked it, but I don't think I had the teacher that was the bigger picture to help me kind of bridge into music that would have spoken to me more. You know, I was reading music and what have you, and that was all fine. But, I don't think it really spoke to me in a way that it could just stick. I mean, I still play the piano. I love the piano. So it's not a problem. But say in fourth grade, you could pick an instrument. So
about school?
I picked drums. And,
oh, really?
Yeah.
It was not a rock and roll class, right?
No. It was band. It was a man came around once a week, and you had your practice pad. And then, I guess, once a week, a lady came around, and you played with the orchestra.
You know? And you were reading music, right?
Yeah, you were boom, tap, and what have you. But yeah. And then junior high comes around and you get to play every day. And I'm just like, I would have never made it through school without music class. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was not
attracted to the other shit.
So, went through junior high, played a lot of timpani then in All City Orchestra. That was a blessing there for sure. And
wait, why did you pick the drums? Just because obviously a friend
of the family played drums, and I thought he was really cool. And he had a band, and we heard them play.
Did he let you on the kit?
Yeah, he let me play a little bit, and I just thought, hey,
was that the first time you owned a kit?
I think it was actually just about. Yeah, I mean, I got my drum set, you know, with the paper route.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But my parents,
Elvin Jones,
would match me, right? If the drum is 200 and I get 100, then they give 100. So I get a bass drum to go with the snare drum. And then sooner or later I get a cymbal, you know.
So we kind of built
it up little by little. But,
so for a while you have one drum and you would just play on that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Save up.
That's what people
drum.
Did. That's you awesome. Know, a lot of times you just played the practice pad for, you know.
Or what Joe Boone, D. Boone's little brother did was, put the paperback book on the snare, and that's the kick drum.
Right.
And then the little metal thing that holds the TV, that's the cymbal.
Yeah.
Ding, ding.
Hey, it all
could be loud anyway.
It's all fair game, you know. I mean, you know, they've all been used.
So you built your drum set one piece. And where were you packing it? In the bedroom?
Yeah.
And it was cool with them?
They were lucky that way. You know.
Now, did you do the shit with the, after school, with the basement or garage or bedroom band?
You know, that kind of came later. I guess being in a rock and roll band was like, they kind of shelved me off as the percussionist somehow, you know, the orchestra guy.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't really finding favor with the rock and roll people quite yet. And I gave it a shot here and there, but, going to some other environment and playing, you know, acoustically was so strange and odd. You know, I wasn't comfortable with all that actually yet. So it was odd because I had friends who their dad bought them a drum set and they could play and sing the next day. You know,
yeah.
So I just wasn't that guy. That's all. But
well, when did you start joining bands?
Well,
after school, college.
No, I guess it was high school that we started putting together jazz group and then led into, you know, horn bands and what have you. And then I was getting more loosened up anyway, you know.
Is that school or after school?
After school stuff. Because school had orchestra,
yeah.
It had stage band.
March.
And my marching, yeah. Which was very cool as well.
Some bands, schools had jazz bands.
Yeah.
Like you said, you were playing guitar.
Yeah, we had a jazz band. Man, my school also did this thing. It was called like a top 40 show twice a year. So like kids you'd have to audition to sing like your favorite pop tune.
Sure.
And then they'd put a backing band together, like a studio band. So I'd get to do that and I have to learn like 30 tunes.
Whoa.
That's.
Yeah, there was like a really.
That's like a
so
real,
not like a talent show, more like a review.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they had a lot of stuff.
That's wild. You got to bring it back. Have schools do music again.
Well, luckily, Long Beach has these magnet programs to where they really amplify. They still kind of amplify the whole music thing. They get the best kids because everybody buses to whatever school has what they like the most these days. It isn't about
where you live,
ethnic or whatever. It's just about what do you want to study?
Mm.
And so luckily Long Beach still has music in the school. But yeah, it's horrible to take that stuff away. It's awful. Yeah.
Well, so you start making horn bands outside of school.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys do gigs?
By the time we're in high school, we started playing like Army, Navy bases and, you know, Air Force, March Air Force Base, the Officers Club or whatever. Yeah. Little by little. A gig here or there. Yeah. I really didn't start gigging until Kai, my first child, was born, mid-70s. And you could play 5 nights a week for months on end at certain bars. You just leave your gear there.
Really?
This is unheard of.
Like a house.
You were the house band. And everybody was fine with that. You didn't have to change. They didn't have to have some other band. They liked, you know, they got used to you.
And how long would you play?
You could play all night. Yeah. 4 hours. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And a lot of original material? No,
no,
a lot of covers.
No, it was.
People want to know what they.
Yeah, they wanted their Van Morrison and their Stevie Wonder and what have you. Yeah. But it was pretty good. Yeah. I guess the major thing for me was that, once I got to college, I started working in the theater arts department. And so I was accompanying all manner of dance classes, whether it was ballet or African or jazz or modern. And then I was...
What about tap?
Yeah. I actually did. That was okay. Noisy and kind of a drag, actually. But I did a little bit of that, too. But they worked out actually better just with the records.
Okay.
But my first experience on stage... seeing the lights on the back wall and what have you, it was just kind of mind blowing how altering or how, what an amazing environment that could create. And so that was kind of a turnaround for me as far as, okay, I'd already been, always kind of been a percussionist. I was really excelling at the drum set finally, but here I am in theater, you know, and all these other options of what that means. It isn't rock and roll. It's about people sitting down listening quietly, and so you have this whole other area that you can go into musically. And so I think that's, you know, I'm not the only drummer on the block who's accompanied dance classes, I'll grant you that, but that was a kind of a major turn for me as far as was kind of what I was about,
sure.
Part of what I was about. So
sure,
I got
sure.
to kind of flourish in that
great,
regard,
great.
I guess. Yeah.
Right there, the first hour, March 19, 2019, edition of the Peter Show. Hold tight for hour two. March 19, 2019, it's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
sale, not for rent. For some, what you represent, our needs, our values, our vacation nation. So we have the Pope pensioners here, and the rich corrupt states of there, and the spoiled black children here, a middle class is hard to spot. And we have nostalgia hit hard, communist opposers, when certainty of the next meal has gone along with the jobs. And we have a Spielman up there, take two to run for office, though it once you're only twice. So
Live from Pedro Show. We start the second hour off with Mike Baghetta doing Ornette Coleman composition, War Orphans. Wasn't that, I've been enlightened to the fact Ornette never recorded himself. So it just remained Dream in the Caravan until, other people fished it out like Charlie. The details from Romania after that with Romania's for Sale. It sounds like a happy tune. Rick Holstrom, Jeff Termas, and Stephen Hodges, the Rick Holstrom trio, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is backing up Mavis Staple for,
Mavis
for, what, 10, 12, 12, 12 years.
Yeah, 12 years, too.
12 years. And I had Rick Holstrom on the show, great cat from Alaska originally.
Right, yes.
And a tune called Descanso. So, yeah, what was that about? That's an album you guys did, right?
Yeah, I forget the name.
Well, how'd you get in with these guys?
Well, that's just like the blues connection here with these two guys.
Ah, we should talk about that. So you come from a theater dance thing in the middle 70s, and then there's a blues connect.
Right. Okay, so here I am working, you know, five nights a week, either in Long Beach or down at the Red Onion in Newport Beach.
OC.
Yeah, exactly, with this guy, Greg Carroll. And then this man named James Harmon comes into my life, and he's got an idea for blues, but with a little different twist. And so my good buddy David Jeriki and I, David's a guitarist, may he rest in peace, fabulous guitarist. He and I start this James Harmon band in the latest 1979, early 80s, and these guys are hardcore about the blues, you know. They want you to study, you know, the simplicity and the feel and the history. And so you don't just get this knowledge any old place, you know. You kind of have to go to these guys who are into it. And so it turned out that that was like my next resource for income as far as, you know, making money playing music as well as just gaining more knowledge. And it turns out that that's where Tom Waits met me, was playing up in L.A. probably in 81.
He's hanging out at the Troubadour and shit.
He's hanging out at the Troubadour. He's hanging out at Madame Wong's, hanging out at Café de Grand, all these little places where you end up going there sooner or later, somewhere, you know, during the year. So we're studying blues. We, you know, it's primal. It's a beautiful form and what have you. And Jeff Termas is coming around the band with his saxophone, sitting in with this other guy, Lawrence Little Hat White. They're like becoming kind of our horn section. Then all of a sudden we need a bass player. Jeff also plays bass. So I'm beginning to know Jeff Termas on the bass as the rhythm section guy. Rick Holmstrom is like the younger one than us. He's probably 10 or 15 years. He sneaks in to hear James Harmon when he's 20 years old or something, you know. But, you know, time passes. It's you know, there's a, you end up knowing certain bands, certain blues bands, you know them. It just, there's associations. So he ends up with Rob Piazza, close affiliation with James Harmon and all these West Coast guys. So basically, I'm knowing these guys for a long, long, long time. And we play together. We just happened to be opening for Mavis on the pier in Thursday night's summer series. And her band doesn't show up. And basically, long story short, as we end up backing up Mavis for like half a set, once the band finally shows up, we just put them on our gear, and then they finish the show. But that's really when Mavis was already kind of thinking about, I need a new band.
Wow.
And so so that's kind of how...
There's a little Ry Cooter connect, though.
Yeah, definitely a big Ry Cooter, because he heard us, he was there that night. We was like, who's this sort of scraggly looking guy hanging out on the side of the stage, you know, so I got standing on the stairs, the side of the stage. Turns out it's Ry Cooter. He's been watching us the whole time, you know. And so, we were playing, you know, opening. We did our 40 minutes. They keep playing. Hour and a half goes by, and we finally go, okay, we're going to stop. What's going on? We go downstairs, off the stage, into the tent. We meet Mavis. She's like the coolest woman on the planet.
Yeah.
And then we start, you know, we go back and play for her. We found out what was going on. And, you know, it didn't come just automatically. But when I left the stage, I made sure to say thank you to Mavis. And she says, make sure my manager has your phone number. So you could kind of tell things were going on. And Ry says, you know, I like that other band way better than your band, Mavis. Well, they were jazz fusion.
You know Ry Cooter?
That's great.
His son is playing drums.
Right, yes.
Joaquin?
Joaquin, yeah.
For who? The Hayden Triplets.
Oh, was he? Okay,
yeah.
We're
stuck about
that. Look at that.
Petra. Yeah. Rachel. Yeah, well, it's incestuous, you know.
Well, I think a lot of coincidence, too.
Well, yeah, and also
magnetic fields.
Proximity and what have you, but, you know, the styles.
Here, I want to play the other songs. That's great, Hodge.
Yeah, yeah.
Giving people story on that. Then December 10th from Chris Chappelle's Distortion Pedal. Best band name ever. Right. And then Feel Specters. No, that's even better.
Feels.
Not Feel Specters. But power went off in the bathhouse.
Look,
is that
out.
You? It don't matter. Mana. And then finally, Breads and Rivers from...
That's not yours. Stop touching it.
And what? Let's play you something from you, Mike. It's called I. I.
ancient church choir in the square, on the hill the old stone stairs, women picking ancient leaves, frost sticking to ancient trees, band playing in the hall, ancient songs before the fall. The narrow cobblestone streets, someone's army sank in defeat. Drunkard with a tinfoil hat, port windows dull and cracked. Seagulls cross through Dover cliffs, graveyard vistas in the mist. Across the bay, in the center, Fort Calais, concrete bunker, barbed wire fence, hungry people know it's fence. War is over, radio blast, how she tried to make it last. Pray for that Bonnie breeze, bring my lover back to me.
For Pedro Show, you just heard Hospital Song, the intro. It's actually in two parts. Actually, you can hear it for yourself because we're doing 10 gigs. Check MikeBaghetta.com. It starts Thursday in Strong Beach at Fingerprints. And then before that was Spain, which is Josh Hayden, Charlie's son, doing Folkestone Kent. Folkestone is where you take the channel. You don't want to take the ferry to the continent.
Okay.
It's like 45 minutes, you're there. Fucking bitching. Ahead of that was Angelo Badalamenti.
Ah,
it's a pink room.
Badalamenti.
Yeah. Badalamenti. And Maggot Brain, before that, which is a funkadelic song, Nels Klein interpreting Eddie Hazel, which it was a trip. Eddie Hazel, George Clinton told Eddie Hazel, your mom died. Play me a solo. And then he turned down all the, for the mix, turns all the instruments off. Yeah.
Dang.
Talk about a device. I heard, like, there's some directors did shit like that. Oh, have yeah. to tell the kids real sad things so they'll cry for real on the camera.
Sharp just told me that story. There's a producer who told his kids, his mom, wrote on the wall, your mom's dead, recorded the crying, and then clued him in.
Is that the kids on Berlin?
Yeah.
Okay. That song is so fucking heavy. Oh, God. The kids, the bed. Sad song. Oh, my God. And Jack Bruce is on two tunes he's not on. I remember when that came out, everyone hated it. I love that record. But it is heavy.
For sure.
Fucking, whew. Berlin, people. Third Lou Reed solo album. And then we start off with I. Mike, tell us about that.
I. Oh, yeah, that's the first record I ever made. It's a record of solo, prepared guitar, kind of, I call them etudes, but they were sort of composed, sort of improvised. And this is interesting because this is my first thing I ever recorded, and it's like so.
Where'd you do it?
Crazy. I did it in a. I was living in Western Massachusetts. I moved back there. I was in New Jersey for a couple years and for a bunch of years in school, and then I moved back to Western Massachusetts. And I was teaching lessons at a place called Art Space up in Greenfield, Massachusetts, near Vermont. And they used to be in this old. I think it must have been an old church because there were these huge stained glass windows and it was like a really big old building. And they gave me, I had just started teaching there and for whatever reason they gave me a key to the building. I never needed it, but I would just go in there late at night when I wanted to like make some noise and stuff because I was living in an apartment. So I'd go in there with an amp or whatever and just like practice and volume and everything. But so I was working on these ideas and I was like, oh, maybe I could record it there. So I had like a, you know, I had a mini disc recorder. And then I had like the stereo Sony mic you get with it. And it was like the whole thing was like $99 or whatever. And I set it up in the middle of the room. I had most of the lights off. And I had this like really kind of sort of trashy kind of plasticky guitar. And I had rigged up all these different rubber bands and mutes and pins and stuff on it, however I wanted to deal with it. And I recorded these different ideas. I think it was like 15 or 20 different ideas. And then I kind of went back and I listened to it. So it's just acoustic, it's a kind of a crappy electric guitar recorded acoustically just in this big space with a mini disc mic. That's the record.
Wow.
You know, and I just worked on all these ideas that were like anti sort of music school ideas. Because I went to school for music.
Sure.
And it was great and I learned a lot of stuff, but I wasn't convinced that music had to just be one way or you know, like I discovered through a lot of different avenues that I like all kinds of music. There's got to be a way I can combine all these different things. It can't be so rigid. It doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of reapproached that by sort of trying to obliterate all the music school things I'd learned in a way. Like
I think they call you a reactionary. You reacted against.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
When, before Minuteman, D. Boone, we had a band and he said, let's call it reactionary.
Yeah.
And I said, why? He said, because Mao Zedong says all reactionaries are paper tigers.
Dang.
I didn't really know what that meant. I said, but okay. Okay, we're at the end of the second hour. It's March 19, 2019 edition of the Wapito Show. Hold tight for hour three. March 19, 2019. It's the third hour of the Wapito Show.
time is gone, and all the summer friends that you made, you don't know if you'll ever see again. Nights are getting long, the nights have got so long, I can smell the holidays, a grinning pumpkin sits ablaze and he's singing that song.
Thank you. in North London and practice transcendental meditation. It involves thinking about a personal mantra to clear your subconscious. I drink hot water and lemon, then have porridge for breakfast with almond milk and honey. I've got a sweet tooth. 11 a.m. pre-New York shopping in Marylebone High Street. I buy Tabitha Simmons ballet flats and a jacket from Matches.
Goes home again. We all know about Margo, my friend. When Margo goes home again, we all know about Margo, my friend.
Stands the old man, all the wheels bound up in his hand. Hardly seen, but we feel him even down here. And a thread through our heads has us all here. No one never ever says old man to the old man. No one never, never ever says old man.
Yo.
Pete Rose Show started off the third hour with "I Am Not a Data Point." Pagetta Keltner Watt from the new album "Walls of Flowers." No, "Wall of Flowers." "Walls of Flower" sounds like a same biscuit time. Biscuit commercial. Bonsai Universe have that with "Summertime." I know it ain't summertime; it's just turning spring. But this is Buddy Woody Appelknopf, buddy of Nels Klein. Mm-hmm. So that you appreciate. And then "National Debt," obscured by cows. That's Crane. From the Tragicomedy, from the Hill, but now living in Idaho. "You to Pimp," "Crushed by Pimps" from South London with "Margot Goes Boho." And finally, for my first offer, "No One Says Old Man to the Old Man," which we want to tackle for this tour. Mike, let's talk about walls. Well, "Walls of Flower." Yeah. "Wall of Flower."
Whatever you want.
"Wall of Flowers."
"Wall of Flowers."
That's it.
Nailed it.
Because I got a call from Chris Schlarb about a year and a half ago, right?
I guess, yeah.
Or a little more than
maybe,
a year ago.
Maybe almost.
"Will you come down and play with Mike Pagetta and Jim Keltner?" Yes!
He said yes.
I'm scared shitless, but I will try it. But
yeah, thank you.
There must have been a backstory for that. Maybe.
There was, yeah. So, let's see. Yeah, well, so I've known Chris for a while. We've been buddies for a while. And he, you know, he ended up getting a studio together, and he had an idea to start a record label. And so he asked me if I wanted to do a record with him, for him, for his label. And I said, yeah, sure. And I had had a conversation before that with a friend, a mentor, a great guitarist, composer, friend of mine named David Torn. And he was talking about his first album, "Cloud About Mercury," which is like another one of my like touchstone records, you know. And I, that music on that album sounded so amazing and tight. I just sort of always assumed it was like this band. They knew each other. You know, Bill Bruford's on it. Tony Levin's on it. Mark Isham's on it. And I just figured they knew each other. But it turns out from talking to David, basically he cold called most of those guys. He didn't know Bruford, but he wanted somebody to play melodic drums or whatever. So he wrote him a letter, he said yes, and all that. So anyways, to me, it was like blowing my mind that he didn't know these guys, that you could go into a studio with maybe people you don't know, and if you have an idea, make music that sounds like people have been playing together their whole life. So all my bands, or all my albums I've made with bands, has been more or less people I've gotten to know first, people I've become kind of friends with, and then we make a record. So I had been thinking about this idea, like, wow, wouldn't it be, I don't know if I could even do that, like make a record with people I don't know. It seems so different than the way I think about music. And so Schlarb asked me about this, and he goes kind of like, well, who would you want to do it with? And in that moment, just in the top of my mind, I was thinking like, well, some of this stuff I've been writing, I really want these like really deep grooves, but I want it to be kind of snaky and kind of weird and off kilter. And just in that moment, the first people I thought of were you and Jim Keltner for bass and drums, the people who embodied that quality to me in that moment in that way, like deep, weird, kind of off-kilter grooves. And I just sort of said it, and then we kind of laughed, like as a joke of something that would never, ever happen, you know. I think he was even like, oh yeah, that's great. When you get serious about it, let me know and we'll figure it out. So like a year went by and we kind of kept joking about it. And then we started to kind of joke less about it. And then I think another 6 months went by and then we were like, well, can we actually do this maybe? And then he kind of put the pieces together and called you guys and we figured out a date that I could come out here and that everybody was around and that's that.
Wow, amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Keller's older gentleman, so when it came time for tour, he was asked but had to bow.
Yeah, I think he just doesn't travel anymore. He's always had nothing but great things to say about the experience and the music and it was really cool. And in fact, so what happened then is I thought maybe when the record come out we would do like one gig out here. Like I could talk him into doing it and I'd fly out and we'd do one show. But I've never done that. I've always had a tour around a record where it just seems like the right thing to do. And I think I had mentioned this to you over email or something.
Yeah.
And you were like, well, we should do it anyways. So we just think about another drummer.
Yeah.
And then immediately I was like, oh man, do you think, kind of keeping the theme of like people I've never met, I was like, wow, do you think Hodges would do it? And you gave me his info. You were like, I don't know, ask him. So I go, okay, I'll ask him.
I thought it would be good.
So I asked him and here we are.
Here we are.
That's
great. All it takes. You
Hallelujah.
You ask and then
seek and
you
shall find.
No, here's one of these tunes that you did with friends that you knew, right? Passage with Jerome Harris, Billy Mintz.
the middle of the birth and I the book to send them in a ceremony. I do all the things we have words for. Everything appears to be what it seems to be. It is, as it is, it be to seems it will be to appears everything. No. What it seems to be, it is, it is, it is, it be to seems it will be to appears everything. I'd rather follow one. I'd rather follow one. Who is this? Themselves, hey, whom it got so many times that the only hope is that the question goes away. For a little bit, for a little bit. Someday, brother, mother, father, sister, lover, you're going to get to cliff on my cliff on my cliff. Soon they're going to have to take a leap. Soon they're going to have to take a leap. Soon they're going to have to take a leap. I say, take that leap. Make that leap.
so stereotyped. It's so
what about this passage? How did this happen?
Okay, yeah, so that's from Spectre. And that is that's a written tune. That's a composed piece. But there's no, I remember telling Jerome and Billy, there's no specific time feel to it. So yeah. It's kind of, there's a groove, there's a meter, or there's a rhythm feel, but there's no meter. So when you listen to it, you kind of feel like, or you actually would start kind of tapping your foot or feeling a pulse, but you can't count it. And that's how this whole idea of sort of playing free but getting into these indiscernible grooves that still lock in kind of came about with me, you know. And that was sort of the next thing I wanted to get into, is more of that idea.
So like flux, like...
Yeah.
The change.
Yeah. But it's still together, right?
Who's that guy?
And they have a lot that they came up with, a good portion of because playing for that, too.
That's always the trippy, the dilemma, right? It goes back to that guy, Heraclitus. That's it. Everything has changed, but if you change too much, maybe it loses its identity.
Yeah.
The dilemma.
Yeah.
But how else could it be? I think his big quote is, you could never stand two times in the same river.
Mm.
Yeah, because if you put the river, the water's washed by, there's new water.
Oh, yeah.
But it is, I mean, music is the arena, the ring. You can get and wrestle these kind of dilemmas or paradox. Totally. Yeah, that's how he wrote, even. It was in Paradox.
Totally.
And so, yeah, you want it both ways.
Right.
But he also had an allegory that was interesting, too. The bow. For the bow to work, you have to have attention.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said the lyre.
Yeah.
He gave that. We're talking 500 BC.
Yeah, you can't have a release if you don't have tension.
Right? Yeah,
like,
right.
You can't have hate if you don't have love.
He also talks about a barley drink that's made with fucking milk. It'll curdle if you don't keep stirring it. It's got to be moving.
Wow.
And no, but I think this is what you're getting at, this idea. Somehow things are locking, but they're not all fucking track homes.
Yeah. Like the stuff we've been working on all week.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, even on, you know, several of the tracks off of Wall of Flowers, you know, it's like Jim Keltner's not necessarily playing time. And it doesn't even sound exactly like he's playing with everybody else, but the parallel universe of it all is that he's playing some music and everybody else is playing some music, and the sum total, it sounds like it's together.
Right.
It's just not together like lockstep, like locked in, you know, like a soul record or something.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a juxtaposition.
It's juxtaposition.
But think about just, you know, like you walk down the street. There's other people walking down the street.
Yeah.
You're with them in a way. You're not with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
It's all part of the same song. Yeah.
Right. Everybody's there. It's the same river, rhythm, no metric, different things, together, not together. They
Ornette had a record called, is it Dance in the Head? Or?
Who's that? Ornette? Yeah, yeah. I think so.
And I think there's two
Dance
versions of it.
Dance in Your Head, something like that.
Yeah, and there's two versions of the song.
Same it's the same record twice, right? It's the same song twice. Yeah.
And then there's another song. I think there's three songs. And it sounds like the dudes are playing different songs at the same time.
Like two radio stations, yeah.
Yeah.
But he does have the tag on it. I mean, there's things he's rallying around. You know, we come from traditions, but we're also trying to make the new way, find the new paths.
Yeah.
It's always going to be kind of this kind of tension like this, I think.
For sure. And yeah, because everybody's different. If you want to think about, like, how do I make what I want to make?
Yeah.
You know, you have to try to make it. Nobody else is going to make it. You can't be totally satisfied with someone else's.
But like Raymond, Raymond's there. But he has done some collaborations, but mostly he's man alone with his ink, right?
Yeah.
Here we're trying to do it by committee.
Right. But that's nice because that's human, right? Doing it together.
Well, man alone's human too, but it's not the whole picture.
Well, we have each other.
You can't survive
to feed off of.
I think about like Newton going into the cave to, right, for 2 years to invent calculus. I mean, Jesus. Maybe it takes man alone, but, and sometimes maybe it's a little difficult to dream by committee.
For sure, yeah. There's something for each of those, but I mean, you know, like for music, like for me, I'm able to do things and come up with a plan, and then I gotta find people that wanna try to make
aid and abet.
You know, yeah.
Sure.
Conspirators.
Co-conspirators. Man, it's been great to have both of you on the show, and it's even greater to have an opportunity to tour these 10 gigs. People, go to MikeBaguetta.com to get the list of the gigs.
All over the United States.
That's MikeBaguetta.com.
Nailed it.
Please check it out and make yourself available, and we'll work our fucking brains out for you.
Okay. Thank you, Watt.
Yeah, no
problem.
Thank you, Baguetta.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's March 19, 2019 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.